Brian called Jim earlier in the week and looking for a bile, and Jim said, "Well, we keep a kind of a low profile here at WPS," which I thought was kind of interesting. And then Jim and I talked earlier and about the format for the lunch today, and Jim said he wanted to be able to talk a little bit about what WPS is and what WPS does, and suggesting, I think appropriately so, that it is perhaps not as widely understood a business in the community as you might think, given its history and its stature in the community. So rather than my presenting Jim's bio and talking about the 60-plus year history of WPS, I thought I would simply ask Jim to do that. And by way of introduction, Jim, if you could talk a little bit about Wisconsin Physician Service, about its place in our community, and about your role there, how you got started there and what you do. And if you want to turn this on so everyone can hear you. There you go.
Already a trick question.
Yeah. Sorry.
I've been out on the other end of this many times and have always enjoyed coming to these luncheons, but I've never felt the heat of being behind the table before. So it is a pleasure to be here to talk about WPS and what we do, and to talk about the things that are going on in healthcare and healthcare financing. WPS started in 1946 in Wisconsin. We're in our 62nd year now. And at that time, we were located in Milwaukee. We had only 9 employees. Today, we have 4,800 in 4 different states. When we started, it was to offer a plan called the Wisconsin Plan, and the description of that plan was a nonprofit insurance plan to help those having difficulty paying for necessary health care. So I guess in 62 years, what's changed? One of the interesting things, though, about that plan is that the premium for the plan was based on the ability to pay, so that individuals with higher incomes paid a higher premium for the same benefit than those that were less able to pay, and for a number of years that worked, and then for all kinds of reasons that are also common today, it eventually didn't work on that basis. However, in 1950, we became part of the Blue Cross Blue Shield system and became a Blue Plan, and we moved to Madison from Milwaukee. WPS has done a lot of things in healthcare financing in its history, and one of the first things we did back in that period was pioneered a concept of usual, customary, and reasonable reimbursement for services, and that was later adopted by virtually every health plan in the country as a method of determining what the value of services provided was. We also recognized that people that were part of group health insurance plans, if they left their employment, would be without insurance, and were the first in the country to develop what's called a conversion plan, and that was a temporary plan that allowed people, when they left employment, to have coverage for an interim period until they eventually went to work somewhere else where they probably got coverage. We, as I was suggesting, sold only the physician side of the plan through 1958, but in 1958, we added hospital coverage to the offering that that we made, and for the first time became a full service plan with both hospital and physician coverage. In the 1960s, we moved towards the enactment of both Medicare and Medicaid, and WPS was named one of the first administrators for Medicare in 1966, and we administered all of Wisconsin outside of Milwaukee County. We also developed at that time one of the very first Medicare supplement programs called Medicare Plus. In 1970, WPS started a health maintenance plan called HMP in Wild Rose, Wisconsin, and it was the first open panel prepaid health plan in Wisconsin. It was a fully capitated plan and was many years ahead of its time. In 1970, and during this whole period, WPS was part of the State Medical Society of Wisconsin. We were a division of the State Medical Society of Wisconsin. But in 1977, the Office of the Insurance Commissioner decided that being in that relationship with the Medical Society potentially offered a conflict and asked us to separately incorporate, which we did. So we became an independent but still a member of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association in 1977. In 1985, we severed our relationship from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Association and became a total independent and went out on our own without the Blue Cross or Blue Shield signs behind us. We also created a forerunner of many of the kinds of plans that we're looking at today and called the Health Incentive Plan, where we developed a way to recognize people's efforts to control the cost of health care. And at the end of usually a 12-month period of time, there was a reconciling of how things were going, and money was put in individuals' accounts, and actually checks were written back to them. Again, it's one of those things that is again being looked at today. During the rest of the time through the present, we spent a lot of time working on developing our data systems, developing the service relationship, the service tools that our employees are going to use, developing our administrative programs and our payment systems that have allowed us today become the largest Medicare administrator in the country in Part B, and then as of yesterday in Part A, as well as we took over the Part A responsibilities from Mutual of Omaha. Our employees are well trained. They're outstanding at what they do, and they're recognized throughout the country as being the best at managing, with the highest quality and the lowest cost, very complicated health programs. As I said, we are the largest administrator of Medicare, and we're also the largest administrator of the military health program called TRICARE, which we've had a relationship with since 1956, and then in the more recent years, as they expanded the program in terms of the size of the contract awards, we are now the subcontractor for the Western region, or the nationwide contractor for all of the dual eligible program, that is all military retirees that are also eligible for Medicare, and we're the only administrator for all health plans in the military outside the United States. I'm proud that our employees are all homegrown. And as a group, they're made up of many family members, because we long ago looked at the idea of allowing family members to be employees there as long as they didn't report to each other. They've been our best advocates and have recruited other members, friends, and neighbors to work for WPS. And it's been a pleasure to be part of the system and to work with them all that time. I'm a Wisconsin resident, was born in Tomahawk, Wisconsin. I graduated from the University of Wisconsin School of Pharmacy and was attracted to WPS in 1973 by their development of the HMP program that I referred to earlier. I was intrigued by that, and I started with WPS heading up their pharmacy consulting and worked with pharmacists throughout Wisconsin. It's been an interesting and very challenging time, and I can tell you that it's gone very quickly. Been a great experience. I had wonderful people to work with, some of the most dedicated and creative people that I've ever had the pleasure of knowing. And as a result of all their efforts, we're in a position that we're in today, and look forward to continued growth. Within the last 2 months, we were awarded a Medicare Part A and B contract that's called Region 5 in this new Medicare bidding system that includes Kansas, Iowa, Nebraska, and what's the other state, Bill? I'm missing one.
Missouri.
And we also were re-awarded on competitive bid for 7 years the administration of the TRICARE program for those that are dual eligible. I guess at this time, Neil, Brian, I'll turn it back to you.
The Mutual of Omaha Part A piece is news to me, Jim. As I recall, when the last big military contract resulted in a pretty significant increase in number of employees for the company. Part A addition, is that a significant growth for WPS?
That'll add about 500 employees in Omaha.
And but nothing here.
Not here right now, anyway.
As I said in my introduction, Jim, it seems like there are a fair number of people for the reach of WPS who don't understand exactly what the company's all about. And I'm thinking from a reporter's point of view, seems like it's always a topic during medicine teacher negotiations. But maybe not so much otherwise. How do you interpret that? What do you make of that? Is that an issue that concerns you in terms of people's perception of the company in the community?
Well, I don't remember if it was P.T. Barnum or not, but when you get your name out there, people at least know who you are. we have, of course, a board member that's a lightning rod. In that particular arena, John Matthews, and John is a strong advocate for what he thinks are benefits that his teachers need. I would say that when they get all done, our only role in this is to provide and administer benefits that they request that we present to them. And as they complete their negotiations, they come up with a package that the school board and the union agree on. And what benefits and what salary and et cetera they put in that package is up to them. But the package ends up to be whatever it's going to be, and then they decide the different benefits and other economic conditions that will be part of the package.
WPS is the only nonprofit left in the state. Is that right?
Health insurer, yes.
Yeah. And what kind of pressure does that put on you? Is that something that you feel confident you can maintain indefinitely?
Well, we feel real good about that because we think that we can put all of our effort into serving our number one customer, and that's the person and individuals and groups that we insure. We don't have any other masters to serve, and so all of our efforts can be put forth to take a look at how we can do the best job for those people that we insure or whose plans we administer. And I think in that format, we compete. And as I said earlier, on both these Medicare contracts and on the TRICARE contracts, we're competing with some of the largest for-profit corporations in the world. And our people outperform and both economically and in quality in those arenas. And I think that we're poised to continue to do that. I think that our underlying philosophy and the values that we have will allow us to continue to compete in that arena.
Can you share with us, any growth plans that you've got, long-term strategies for maintaining the health of WPS?
Well, we're in the health insurance business, and we've been in it for starting our 62nd year, and obviously we'd like to insure everyone in Wisconsin. So we're always looking towards that goal. But in a more practical matter, we are continuing to bid on Medicare contracts. There's going to be a total of 15. Three have been awarded to date. We're going to bid on at least two or three more. Mm-hmm. And those, if we're successful, will have an impact on jobs in Madison directly, but also to the growth and stability of the company. We continue to work on the private sector, looking at the most creative ways we can come up with to develop plans that will address the needs that people have that need health insurance coverage, and we feel very confident that we will find solutions that will be those that are desired by buyers of health insurance.
Jim, in your opening remarks, you talked about creating health incentive plans. Can you describe those? By that, do you mean that if people do a better job of being healthy, they're rewarded, or?
Overall, they were measured on the gross results of outcomes, and if people were able to use less services than the amount that was assigned to them, and they were given help wherever possible in making choices. We also altered our health insurance contracts about 25 years ago to have a provision in them that allows us latitude in working with healthcare providers on treatment plans that might not otherwise be easily defined as covered in the policy. So when and they I can tell you the case that caused it to happen. I had a call one day from a physician that wanted to discharge a person from the hospital and have them go home on IV therapy and with nursing care in the home. And the policy that we had at the time didn't clearly delineate that as being a benefit that was payable. So we had to come up with a way to not set a precedent yet work that out. And we did work that out with that particular physician, and then we came up with language that allowed us in the future to continue to work with healthcare providers in ways that provide the best care in the most economical manner. And that's what we're constantly looking at, is how do you provide the right care at the right time for the right price.
This is a little bit off the medical field, but do you have a sense of how from your perspective, how the economy, overall economy is doing around here?
Obviously, being an insurance company, we're in two different revenue streams that we work with. One is your investing, and your investment results help stabilize the kinds of things you can do in the insurance. And we're also in the insurance and the administration business, where we generate revenue from those sources as well. So we have to pay attention to both the national and the world economies in terms of how the investment side is going, to make sure that we can do the best possible thing in those areas to keep the returns that we need from invested income to be as high as they possibly can be, because that helps us stabilize our reserves in a way that we can be more aggressive and creative in the things that we want to do in the private sector. Also, we need to be aware of what's going on, certainly in Wisconsin, because we're a Wisconsin insurer, and so we're looking at all times at any of the different trends that may be in Wisconsin. Now, to date, what I'm seeing is that both the employment and unemployment rates appear to be fairly steady throughout 2007. I haven't seen any indicators that I look at that suggest that there's wild things happening that are going to affect insurance. Additionally, we take a look at who's buying insurance and who's not buying insurance, or who's maybe not buying insurance anymore that was buying insurance. And we're not seeing it, even though you'll read stories from time to time about small businesses that are no longer offering insurance, we're not seeing evidence right now that there's any more small businesses today that are dropping the offering of health insurance than there were in the past few years. So it's on the cusp and it's out there, but it's the trend we're seeing has been pretty steady over the past 3, 4, 5 years.
I'm curious to know why you think that is, Jim, and if that conflicts with the recent report that the Campaign for Economic Development, which may be bigger rather than smaller companies, is beginning to think that employer-provided insurance is not necessarily sustainable into the future. And then I want to ask about Healthy Wisconsin, because that seems to be driving some new enthusiasm for Healthy Wisconsin. But talk a little bit about the broader environment in terms of insurance. Do you think that there are pressures on small businesses that might change if some of these bigger companies decide that employer-provided insurance is not the future?
Well, clearly, if large employers decide that they want to try to go a different route, it's going to have an effect on what small employers do. Everyone that's in business, whether it's a small business or a large business, is doing everything they possibly can do in developing the benefit offerings that they make to prospective employees and to current employees to retain them, to try to put together a package that will give them the best possibility of getting the best and the brightest in their particular jobs. So there's going to be pressures on that. With regard to the cost, there's nothing really that I've seen that has had an effect on the continued growth of healthcare costs, and so that all of the offerings that I've seen to date have not seemed to dampen it. Now, the best dampener of healthcare costs is coming up, and that's an election year. And I think that you'll see that the slope of cost over the next 24 months, probably starting from maybe September, October of this past year, through the election, maybe into early 2009, you're going to see some stabilization of healthcare costs, because traditionally, if you take a look at healthcare costs over the election periods of the last 40 or 50 years, they always stabilize a little bit during those periods of time. But the continued concern, obviously, on the part of business is that the cost, the healthcare is a cost within our structure that we have to compete daily more so on a global market than ever before. Our costs are higher that we're taking on. Not that the healthcare costs in other places aren't necessarily high. They're absorbed, though, by other places, by governments and other means of reducing it from some of the competing product. And depending on who you listen to, I heard a speaker recently talk about the possibility that in 5 years there won't be an automobile built in this country. I don't know whether they're right or not, but certainly one of the elements of that consideration was the fact that healthcare costs are a major issue that we have to contend with here, among other things.
So how would you characterize the recently concluded budget talks in terms of healthcare in this state and now the conversation about a standalone Healthy Wisconsin bill and the prospects for that?
Well, with regard to the budget, I think first of all you have to look at Wisconsin. Wisconsin ranks in the top 3, 4, 5 states in the country in terms of the least number of people uninsured. After you get past Hawaii and I forgot the second state in there right now, but Wisconsin comes in a very close third, fourth, fifth in the nation. We don't have a major uninsured problem here as they do in some of the other states like Texas and California and Louisiana and so on. There are steps within the budget that are being taken, particularly with regard to Badger Care Plus, that are going to get at a population that, if you look at the numbers, probably the most accurate number that I've seen that represents uninsured in Wisconsin is around 250,000. What I'm talking about there are people that are uninsured for 12 months or more, as opposed to someone that's uninsured for just a month or two. Like in the construction industry, for example, you may have some people that for 2, 3, 4 months don't have insurance, but the rest of the year they do. And there were elements in the budget that involved getting at that base of people. One of them, there was that they agreed, I think, to still go forward with the waiver on. There's 71,000 people uninsured that are childless adults. They meet all the requirements of Medicaid today as far as being eligible, but they can't be part of Medicaid because they don't have a child, and there's going to be a waiver request, I believe, going through there. Originally, they were looking for some funding, in part through cigarette tax and through some other means, to try to get that group covered in a way that would have immediately eliminated them. There's additional efforts going on to try to look at ways to support smaller businesses, particularly businesses of 10 or 15 in size and under, where they offer health insurance, but a number of the employees of those businesses don't have enough income, or they don't feel they have enough income in order to pay the cost of the insurance that's offered. If all of those initiatives would be successful, I believe the most recent number that I saw, and I think it's consistent with the numbers that we looked at when I was on the Healthy Wisconsin Commission, is there would be 98% of Wisconsin residents would be insured in one form or another.
Earlier this year, I believe that the Wisconsin Farm Bureau issued a report that said that family farmers have some of the hardest time getting insurance, and that a lot of them don't have it, and that a lot of spouses work specifically so they can get insurance. Your thoughts on that?
We've been involved in insuring farmers in our history for many years, and it's a very difficult area, and I think what the last part of your statements was pretty much true, is that most farmers, one or the other, usually the spouse has a job somewhere